Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Milwaukee Journal Sentinel Milwaukee Brewers podcast joining you on a Monday morning as the Milwaukee Brewers are coming off a winning road trip. They went to St. Louis. They went to Chicago. They won 2 of 3 in both places. We got to talk all about it. My name is J.R. Radcliffe, host of the Milwaukee Brewers Journal Sentinel podcast. And on the other line is Todd Rosiak, Brewers beat reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Find everything he has to say at jsonline.com. Todd, last week we focused on the offense. It was struggling, and we could talk about the offense too, but this week was pretty much all about this pitching staff, specifically the rotation. The five guys, one turn through the order here, all of them went at least 5 innings, and only one of them gave up a single run. That was Sunday, Brett Anderson allowing an RBI groundout in a 7-0 game already to a Cardinals reliever. That was it. So almost an unprecedented run through the starting pitching this week. Obviously, some very dominant performances, specifically from guys like Burns, Peralta, and Brandon Woodruff. Is there anything you can compare this to? Have you seen anything like this from Brewers pitching where they get on a hot streak like this? Because I don't know if I can think of anything like this.
Isn't it amazing how the narrative changes? Weren't we talking about firing Andy Haynes on social media like 4 days ago?
Specifically, I was not. However, I'm sure he heard it from some fans. Different world just a few days later.
Yeah, no, it's been pretty remarkable. And, I guess not to sound, spoiled or anything, but you kind of are expecting this type of pitching from Brandon Woodruff and Corbin Burns from the rest of the crew, not exactly, and especially, the guys further down in the rotation, the Adrian Housers, the Brett Andersons, the Freddie Peraltas, but it's been just an incredible run for these guys so far. And, I don't know. I mean, it's almost hard to picture. It's hard to encapsulate what they've been able to do. And the only thing I can come up with is it's a shame that, a number of those performances were wasted by, a non-existent offense to start, start the season. Good thing for them, they've kind of gotten back on track here the last few games, but it's definitely been fun to watch. And it's interesting how the narrative of the team changes so fast. You knew you were good with Woodruff and Burns. After that, you weren't really sure. You thought, oh man, the bullpen's going to be lights out. That's one of the strengths of the team, and that really has kind of been a weakness. That in the offense at this point. So, things will even out, of course. But in Woodruff and Burns, you have really just an incredible 1-2 punch at the top there. And it's fun to watch them pitch because they just look so confident and so comfortable. And if both of those guys can stay healthy through the course of the season, it's going to be really fun to watch the numbers they put up by the end, because they're in line for something really special. And, as Craig Counsell kind of loosens the reins on all these guys as time goes on, it's going to be interesting to see how deep some of these guys can get into games. And I know that was a big topic on Twitter, especially with the way the bullpen has faltered. How can you take these guys out after 6 innings, 75 pitches? Well, Craig Counsell was very clear from the get-go that this is going to be a process. And, you're not going to one start, two starts into the season, be letting these guys go 105 pitches, 110 pitches, 8 innings. And, to their credit too, Brandon Woodruff and Corbin Burns both said after their last starts, like, hey, we're fine with when we came out. We were gassed. So, hear the guys say that and look at the marathon rather than the first mile of the race, so to speak. It makes perfect sense to, get through six. If you're good after six, hey, put him down and let him rest 4 days and see if they can go a little bit further the next time.
I was going to bring up what you just said, that Woodruff made it very clear after his start against Chicago, a game that the Brewers ended up winning in extra innings thanks to two home runs, basically, from Lorenzo Cain. He said he was no gas left in the tank, you know, that that he did as much as he could. And ironically, Burns has pitched the best of them, I think, and he's the Brewers have somehow lost both games that he's started, which is frustrating, but Burns, I mean, I know we talked about him in the last podcast, and he was so good in 2020, and you see him with that first start of the year taking a no-hitter into the seventh, and you think, okay, well, maybe the 2020 season was totally legitimate, as weird as that season was, and Burns really has taken a leap forward. To me, seeing him do the same thing against the Cardinals, lead off triple and then no other hits for six innings, I mean, I need no other confirmation, and maybe it's on me to have needed it, you know, to need a confirmation at this point, but he's on a run now where you look back at his last 14 starts or whatever it is going back through the 2020 season, it's as good as any run in Brewers history. I mean, CC Sabathia-like numbers, his ERA at 1.87 since the start of 2020. I mean, this is a Cy Young candidate, right? And honestly, like, you look around the NL Central, I don't know if there are any other pitchers in this division that I can say for sure are better than Corbin Burns. Right now, I don't think there is anybody better than Corbin Burns, and maybe there isn't anybody better than Brandon Woodruff. That's a heck of a luxury right now.
Yeah, it really is crazy, and I know we talked about it last week, like you said, but it just I keep going back to 2 years ago when he struggled so badly, and you thought, like, man, maybe this guy was just a flash in the pan. You know, he was started throughout the minor leagues. You tip your cap to the guy because he came up, thrown out of the bullpen. He was a really crucial piece to that bullpen in 2018. And all of a sudden it's like, you know, hey, we're going to get him back in the rotation this next year. Those first several starts, he was striking guys out like crazy in 19, but giving up a ton of home runs. And it just went off the rails from there. So, again, we talk about major league players, professional athletes having just incredible focus and incredible strength mentally to overcome adversity and to pinpoint, you know, obviously along with the coaching, what's wrong and really try to drill down on those things. I just don't see any better example of that than Corbin Burns. And I think the Brewers definitely deserve a lot of credit too. Their pitching lab, their player development staff, identifying what was going wrong with Corbin Burns and helping him fix that. And then him taking the initiative to go see a sports psychologist and come into last season just completely remade. And he just has not skipped a beat. You know, it's really remarkable to see. He's far surpassed, I think, already what, you know, people were expecting out of him as a fifth round pick and, you know, former minor league pitcher of the year in the organization. I'm sure the expectations were high and everything, but, you know, like you said, this guy is pitching like a Cy Young candidate. This guy is pitching like a legit number one starter for any team in the majors, and a future all-star, say it however you want. And again, when you pair him up with Brandon Woodruff, another guy right along those lines, it's a heck of a 1-2 punch at the top of the rotation. And it's just after all the years of the Brewers struggling to try to develop their own pitching, it's been, I'm sure, very gratifying for them. And it's been fun to watch all of a sudden these two guys come together. And then, you know, even though Freddie Peralta isn't technically homegrown, he mostly is, you know, Freddie's another guy who really seems like he could be on the cusp of something big. If you can get him to be more consistent, you know, you make him the third part of that, of what could be a really good trio. And then you're really talking about something.
I'm really curious to see Freddie pitch against the Cubs on Monday night as the Brewers return home to American Family Field. Their second look already at the Chicago Cubs. Pitched well. I mean, certainly had some great pitches and left having allowed only one hit against the Cubs at Wrigley Field. And then with a healthy dose of Brent Suter, I believe Brent Boxberger is in there as well. Brewers ended up pitching a one-hitter. That's the third straight year that they have thrown a one-hitter. Freddie Peralta still maybe a little bit of an adventure because of the command. But if he, and Tom Haudricourt wrote about this at JS Online, about his totally shifted repertoire. He's not fastball Freddie anymore. In fact, he's throwing his fastball less than 50% of the time for a guy who was throwing it, I don't know percentage-wise, but it seemed like 85, 90% of the time in previous years. I'm really curious to see, because as this repertoire sort of evolves, like you said, maybe he's at that level too. You know, it's easy to dream on that after one really solid start, but like, I mean, it's hard not to see the upside now. Freddy Peralta still seems like he's really finding a groove, and I don't know, this start really has my attention.
Yeah, and Tom, I know, was joking on Twitter, maybe we should start calling him Senior Slider instead of Fastball Freddy. Yeah. Freddy, we talked to him this morning, and he's such a good kid and very affable, and you know, he chuckled about the nicknames and all that stuff. But again, it's just, you know, it's an example of a kid who came up so young. I mean, what was he, 21? You know, when he came up and had that incredible start on Mother's Day in Colorado, and you know, was getting by really just on pure talent and a fastball that rose in the zone, and guys were swinging through it. Well, eventually hitters are going to catch up and are going to figure out you're a one-trick pony. And that's where the coaching comes in. That's where the development comes in. And that's where the experience comes in. And I think after a few years here of, you know, bouncing back and forth between the rotation and the bullpen and getting a little, you know, gaining a little bit more strength, a little bit more weight, gaining confidence and just learning how to pitch, you know, again, he's still very young. And he's a guy that, you know, has some innings under his belt now. He's seen that his stuff plays at that level. And I think it's just a matter of pitching more consistently and putting all those things together. And if he can do that, again, just another really, you know, kind of tantalizing, talented piece that the Brewers have locked up for a number of years now at a very reasonable price. So, you know, if he goes on and fulfills that potential and then some, the Brewers got themselves a heck of a bargain moving forward.
One of the downsides of this week has been the injury bug. We had kind of a cool story in the start of the St. Louis series where Colton Wong, who of course was a St. Louis Cardinal for the entirety of his big league career, and he didn't get a farewell because 2020 didn't give us a chance to see fans in the stands. So he comes back with the Brewers, has tears in his eyes in his first at bat against Adam Wainwright. A really cool moment. He gets a great round of applause. But then that was the last game we saw him. He left with a recurrence of an oblique injury that had popped up a couple days earlier. He's now on the injured list. Brewers were called Brad Boxberger in his stead. And by the way, that guy's been very good in the relief appearances we've seen. But losing Wong obviously hurts. He had struggled to start the year and offensively, but defensively, I mean, that's why he's there. He's just such a rock defensively, Gold Glove second baseman. And now they've had to mix and match. What do you think the Brewer? They did call up Jace Peterson to take his place. In fact, Boxberger's must be a different roster move. But Jace Peterson takes his place at second base. Do you think that's ultimately what they'll do? They'll ride it out with Jace Peterson, or do you expect they try to put Keston Hira from first over to second, or they signed D. Strange Gordon on a minor league deal? Maybe that ultimately, when he's through the COVID protocol, maybe that's an option. What do you think the Brewer, if they had their druthers, what do you think the best course of action is for the Milwaukee Brewers at second base?
It sounds right now like, you know, they're expecting it to be, if not a minimum 10-day IL stint, then a few days after that. You know, obviously they know better than we do since they're treating him and so forth. But as we all know, obliques are very tricky. And generally speaking, when you're talking about minimum IL stints, that you can kind of paint yourself into a corner a little bit, because it's very easy to have a setback coming back from those things. So, you know, let's say it's like, you know, 10, 11, 12 days and he's back. I think you can ride it out safely with Jace Peterson and then, you know, shifting Daniel Robertson over there on the off days where you're facing a starting left-handed pitcher. Craig Counsell did say he wasn't counting out the possibility of Keston Hira sliding over to play second maybe once or twice. Remains to be seen whether that, you know, that will occur. To me, it almost seems, you know, not a great idea. Just, you know, let the guy get comfortable at first base rather than sliding him over there and taking his mind off of that. And, you know, maybe messing up as they're slowing his development a little bit there. You know what you're going to get from Jace Peterson, you know, not necessarily huge offensive numbers, but a guy that at least is going to battle and put together some good at bats. He's a left-handed bat. He's got a little bit of pop, you know, heady veteran player. So, if you're talking less than 2 weeks, I think you can kind of ride it out with those guys, especially, if the offense continues to produce the way it has been the last few games, and you're getting some really good contributions from guys like Avi Garcia moving forward. And if Christian Yelich is not out of the lineup very long, if at all, with that back injury, hasn't been driving in runs, hasn't really been driving the ball, but has been hitting and getting on base. So that's definitely a good sign as well.
Yeah, the Sunday game, like you said, more injuries with Yelich leaving the game with back soreness, and Travis Shaw leaving with a bruised shin. Shaw said he believed he'd be able to play, wouldn't miss time starting this week, but who knows? Those things could be, especially back soreness, could be the type of thing that sticks around for a while. I agree with you on moving Hira. It seems like it's not like they have a ton of options at first base. I mean, Daniel Vogelbach could play there, but that's not an ideal defensive situation for the Brewers. So it's not like they've got somebody who can obviously play first if Hira moves to second. Hira did hit a home run on Saturday to snap out of his early funk. He was 0 for 20 to start the year before a double in that series against the Cardinals. And then he hits the home run. As you've watched Keston Hira, I know there was a lot of emphasis on the pitches over the middle of the plate that he was missing, and especially in that Twins series. It does seem like he's carried some of the offensive struggles he experienced in 2020 to the early part of 2021, fully acknowledging the small sample caveat. What benchmarks do you think the Brewers are looking for? I mean, they're going to give him several weeks at least to get out of a funk, but do you think at some point they would investigate putting him down at the alternate site to get reps defensively, to get swings offensively, to try to get back on track? What are the things you think the Brewers are going to look for before they would entertain a move like that?
I think they'd have to feel like he's just struggling so badly, and mentally he just is not able to snap out of it, that it would require a move down to the alternate site. And I just don't see that happening at this point. They have supreme confidence in him. It's a guy that's hit at all levels. Yes, he had a tough 2020, but again, small sample size alert, off to a slow start this year, obviously. But, even though he was in that slump, he did have several at bats where he was hitting the ball hard, just kind of hit into some bad luck, right at guys. So the strikeouts, I think, are a concern and remain a concern. And it may very well be that over the course of time, he is just going to be a guy that, you're going to have to take some of those high strikeout totals. But, along with those, by the end of a full season, you're going to have 30 plus homers and, 90 to 100 RBI. So I think the optioning him out is not really in the conversation at this point. I think you'd have to endure some very serious struggles moving forward and, show signs of really having a hard time dealing with it before they would go that route.
Speaking of another Brewers infielder, I remember where the Brad Boxberger transaction comes in. That was after Milwaukee decided to trade Orlando Arcia to the Atlanta Braves for a couple relief pitchers, both of whom are starting up at the alternate site. The team did then add Brad Boxberger. He's been pretty good. But losing Arcia, that's a long tenured member of this team. And I think it's kind of fair to say that they didn't have anybody on this roster they had guys on this roster who can do all the things Orlando Arcia does. And this is maybe a move we've sort of been anticipating since the team traded for Luis Urias before the 2020 season. They did commit to him as shortstop coming into the year, Urias, the younger option. But they do lose a personality, somebody who's been on this team for a while, somebody who's been able to be part of this lighthearted clubhouse that has had so much success. What do you think this team is losing with Arcia? Did it catch you off guard to see them make this move or anything along those lines?
Yeah, I mean, it didn't catch me off guard that they traded him. The timing is what caught me, and I'm sure a lot of people off guard, because you just don't see trades the first week of the season like this. I think that he definitely was a well-loved guy in the clubhouse. It's a very different clubhouse and a very different roster than it was a few years ago when you had the Jesus Aguilars and the Hernan Perez's and that sort of thing. It's a little bit more veteran, I guess you would say, and Orlando Arcia, obviously you could include in that, but a younger veteran. But a guy with a smile always on his face, a guy who definitely you could tell loves playing the game. The fans liked him. he obviously had his ups and downs offensively. He basically, I think he is what he is at this point. You know, a guy that's going to hit for, you know, relatively low average. He's going to have a relatively low on base percentage just because he's a very aggressive hitter and pretty much swings at everything. You're going to get a little bit of good with that as well. Defensively, you know, I was looking at his numbers after he was traded, and it just always kind of blew my mind because it really was the case for most of his career with the Brewers. For as good as he is at shortstop, and he really has all the tools, he's got incredible range, really good throwing arm, all that, pretty much everything you want in a shortstop. You look at the metrics, and he just never really measured out in the metrics, if that makes sense. You know, yeah. He was always average to slightly below average in the metrics, you know, defensive run saved, that sort of thing. And I just never could put, it never made sense to me. But, you know, again, that's the way the game is played nowadays and the way the decision makers look at things. And I don't know necessarily that really played into the trade much, but, you know, the fact that the Brewers were able to get a couple of younger live arms, guys that haven't really done it yet at the major league level. But, you know, again, this is kind of like, you know, a couple more lottery tickets. If the Brewers can hit on one of these two guys and get a reliable contributor out of the bullpen for them, that's great. But in the meantime, they've basically painted themselves into the corner at shortstop with Luis Urias, who's off to a, you know, horrific start at the plate. And, you know, that's a guy that's really not shown many signs of snapping out of it. And you have to wonder at his age, you know, the confidence, the mental side there, you know, when is that going to really start wearing on the guy if it hasn't already? And then what kind of options do you have at shortstop? So interesting trade from that perspective, and we'll see how it plays out.
Yeah. And speaking of young arms that haven't really had a chance to show their stuff at the big league level, I wanted to talk about JP Fireyzen a little bit. You know, for as high profile as the Brewers back end of the bullpen is with Devin Williams and Josh Hader, we've only seen those guys two outings apiece. I know Williams has struggled a little bit in the early going, which I don't know, might be an early red flag for some people, but really we've seen a lot of Brent Suter. We've seen a lot of JP Fireyzen, Boxberger, like we said. It's sort of interesting that way. And Fireyzen, the Wisconsin kid, I know he had to work out of a little bit of a mess in one of his games, but really, really impressive. Not just a cool story as a Wisconsinite on this roster. He has looked very good. It seems like that might be the find of the year so far, that this guy is going to be someone that they can rely on in some pretty high leverage situations.
Yeah, Craig Counsell was very effusive in his praise of JP Fireyzen after that appearance against the Cubs, where, you know, they put him in a really tough situation. He got the first two outs and just in that ninth inning and just couldn't get out of it. And Boxberger came in and put the fire out at that point, fire out for Fireyzen. But he's a guy that, you know, like if he wasn't pitching the way he is, think about where that bullpen might be now. You know, he's a guy that really needed to step up and do what he's doing. So from that perspective, the Brewers are very fortunate. And we talked to Chris Hook this morning about him, and he was very high on him and, you know, gave him kudos for coming into camp, having really remade his body, dropped some weight, put on some good weight. And he's also throwing his changeup now more and more effectively, which gives him another way to keep batters off of his four seamer. His slider has always been his pitch, and if he gets that over consistently, he's going to do really well. So, you know, in a season where so far, and again, small sample size, Drew Rasmussen and Eric Yardley are not pitching very well out of the bullpen, JP Fireyzen and Brad Boxberger both doing good work early has been really key for the Brewers.
Yeah, Drew Rasmussen with a nice inning on Sunday that hopefully will help him build some confidence back up after he had a rocky start. That's pretty much all I got for you, Todd. Any other thoughts or observations you've had? Are that All-Star Game dream we talked about on the last podcast, mm-hmm. my dream anyway, died on the vine pretty quickly, the All-Star Game going to Colorado. So that was a bummer. But anything else that's caught your attention this week?
Well, just kind of thinking around the diamond, a few things. Obviously, Avisail Garcia getting him going at the plate has been very big. You know, crushing two homers and hitting the way he did against the Cardinals this weekend. Very good for the Brewers. The hitting and the offense that the Brewers have gotten out of their catching spot with Omar Narvaez and Manny Pena has been a definite bonus. And to see Omar Narvaez hitting the way he has been to start the season, that's got to be a huge load off of his mind and a huge load off the Brewers' collective mind because, you know, it didn't get much worse than what he did offensively last year. So, you know, just to see him doing what he's doing, getting off to that start is very big. And how about Travis Shaw? You know, I mean, he hit well in St. Louis, and just the numbers and the steadiness he's provided over at third base, really remarkable. It's kind of like the Travis Shaw, you know, of the olden days where 2017, 2018, you know, he looks like that guy again. And what a signing if he turns out to be able to carry this throughout the course of the season. You know, not only does he solidify a position that's been a black hole for the last couple of years, but, you know, left-handed power bat, that really could be huge. So, and a good redemption story too, you know, a guy that left Milwaukee not on the greatest terms and, you know, kind of spun his wheels in Toronto last year, to have him come back and do what he's doing. I think that's pretty cool. So those are the things that kind of stand out to me at this point. And then I do want to throw in a plug too. We have to talk about food a little bit.
Of course, Todd.
I did hit up Dairy Queen tonight, and the frosted animal cracker blizzard. Oh, chef's kiss right there.
Oh my gosh.
Telling you.
Not for me, but I understand the appeal.
Yeah, very good. So I wholeheartedly endorse that, by the way.
Yeah, no doubt what you're saying before too. Obviously, El Garcia snapping out of it big time in these last two games. Travis Shaw's big home run on Sunday. Those two guys, you know, the story is gone. If they could just be an average offense, they would be in good shape. They were somehow a playoff team even without an average offense last year. And the guys on the fringes, Omar Narvaez, you can throw him in there as well, making contacts as he is this year. That's big help for the Brewers. And even if Christian Yelich isn't collecting extra base hits and Castañeda is struggling, you do have those other guys getting the job done. So Todd, that's all we got. Thanks for joining me this week. We'll do it again next week.
Sounds good, JR. Have a good one.
Find us on Stitcher, Spotify, or Apple Podcasts. Let us know what you think. Ratings and reviews, always appreciated. You can find me on Twitter at JR Radcliffe. You can find Todd on Twitter at Todd _Rosiak. I got that right? _?
Correct.
Yes. All right. So let us know what you think, and we will chat with you again next week. Take care, everybody.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.